Monster Man, episode 318, Leviathan and Masher. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we're continuing our journey through the Lowlife section of Creature Catalog, the 1986 supplement for Basic Dungeons & Dragons. And once again, we're dealing with creatures that are perhaps lowlife in the sense that they're wildlife, so they don't have an agenda. They're not antagonists to the PCs, but in neither of these cases could they be said to be low life, like the kind of small vermin that you would find. I am really struggling to figure out what the distinction is between low life and animals, because it's not size. There are comma giant animals, like the octopus comma giant is in the animal section, but the jellyfish comma giant is in the lowlife section. I mean, I don't know. Anyway, none of this is really relevant to the Leviathan and the Masher, so let's take a look at them. We begin with the Leviathan, and it is very easy to explain. It is the sandworm from Dune. It is a giant worm. I mean giant. They've got like 70 hit dice. They burrow through the sand. There's also a marine version that I guess swims through the water. There's a fun little mechanic for how they feed, which is that they scoop up like a huge mouthful of sand, sieve out all the things that are nutritious, and spit out all the things that aren't. So the player characters, you know, rather than being directly attacked, just have to save to get out of the way of the huge scoop that this thing is taking of all of the landscape around them. And I think that that's a mechanic that does a really good job of conveying the scale of this opponent. It's very tough, but it's not particularly aggressive. It's just feeding and you might be in its path, which is interesting because what that means is that it is a monster that has like different approaches. One thing that I keep forgetting when dealing with Bekmi is that high level Bekmi characters, who conceivably can go up to like level 36, high-level Bekmi characters are extremely powerful. This is a game that escalates very rapidly at its high levels. I mean, I've never played a high-level Bekmi game. Indeed, I play BX, not Bekmi, but never mind. The people who are in the know say that this is not an inappropriate challenge for very high-level Bekmi characters. There really are people in the game who could fight this brute. But at the same time, it is something that you can avoid if you don't feel confident taking it on. So it is a monster that you can think your way around, which is something that I always really appreciate. In terms of its origins, I mean, I think its literary origins are pretty clear. You know, obviously one of the first things that fantasy fans do is try to sort of adapt their favorites into their favorite game system. So no surprise that someone tried to make a Dungeons & Dragons version of the Sandworm. The David Lynch film of Dune comes out in 1984, so just a few years before this, but also, you know, the novel was popular among the kind of science fiction and fantasy fans who were playing Dungeons & Dragons, and indeed, there is a version of the Sandworm that appears in a relatively early Fiend Factory column, but doesn't make it into the Fiend Folio for presumably obvious reasons. This kind of monster is something that I struggle a bit with in terms of using it in my own campaign, because I am always, and maybe too much so, you know, maybe more than I need to be, I tend to be worried about being accused of being derivative. I don't like the idea of obviously copying something, or of kind of putting my James's fingerprints so obviously on the game by including things that I happen to be a fan of. Now, obviously that's ridiculous. My games are full of lifts from things that I happen to enjoy. And, you know, I go through phases, right? So you can see what I'm into at that moment from what gets included in a game that I'm running. So there's a phase a few years ago where all the games I'm running have some kind of, like, spy or Cold War aspect to them. It was just something that I was reading about at the time, or something like that. You know, just something that was on my mind. I don't really think there's anything wrong with that, and it's not something that bothers me as a player when I play in other people's games. But for some reason, I am always very anxious about the idea that someone will look at something that I've included in my game and just go, oh, like in Hellboy, or whatever. To this day, it bugs me that I was running a game and I included an NPC who was named Comstock, which I, you know, named after Anthony Comstock, the turn of the century decency crusader, and only later discovered that the character in BioShock Infinite is called Comstock, and that, like, at a time when that was had really just come out and was sort of in the public consciousness. Now, obviously, the Comstocks in BioShock Infinite are named after Anthony Comstock, but it really bothered me that everyone would think that I named an NPC after a character in a video game, when even if I had done that, so what? So maybe I'm just oversensitive to this issue. Anyway, the Leviathan is fine. It's interesting in games. You know, it is derivative, but that's the nature of the melange of influences that makes up D&D, right? Next up, we have the Masher. I have been reading Mashers all wrong, because Mashers actually are in the Monster Manual, the original Monster Manual, and we did cover them way back in Season 1. And the thing about the Masher is that somehow I missed that they're size large. Maybe I did discuss that in the episode, but in my mind, the impression of the Masher was that it was basically a bit like the dragonfish. It was just another poisonous, if you bother it, but otherwise harmless piece of undersea life, which, as you can no doubt tell, that means it's from the Blackmoor campaign, where there's a lot of sea life going on. Indeed, we've already seen the Mashers crop up in this season because they are the animals that pull the undersea carts, as it were, of the Kna. Mashers are fine. They're basically giant sort of undersea worms. They're described as worm-like fish in the Monster Manual. These ones are even bigger than the Monster Manual versions. These ones are like 100 feet long. They have a bite attack and a tail sting, but the Kna ones are domesticated and have their stings removed, which is kind of a neat touch. And they have a little touch that kind of adds to the sense of naturalism, which is that they are not usually aggressive, but they become aggressive during their mating season. And it specifically describes them as, like, forming into a giant writhing ball of mashers, which is a legitimately horrible image. I have tried not to make this a podcast about the history of Dungeons & Dragons. I think one of the things that is so valuable about the kind of loosey-goosey pulp adventure approach to fantasy role-playing games is that you can take your influences from anywhere and not have to do an enormous amount of homework. It's just that temperamentally I'm the kind of person that does an enormous amount of homework, and I'm trying not to be, if that makes sense. At the same time, I do think that maybe I should go and read up some on the history of Blackmoor, because I am genuinely interested in the ways in which it seems very different from the things that came to be understood as the standard versions of D&D. One of my recurrent sources of confusion about Dungeons & Dragons is that if you think about, like, the three main settings of Dungeons & Dragons, you think about Greyhawk, you think about the Forgotten Realms, and I guess maybe, at least back in the day, you think about Dragonlance, although probably these days you think about, you know, Eberron. And I guess these are different from each other? But, like, they don't seem very different. I know there are lots of, like, fiddly differences between Greyhawk and the Forgotten Realms, but, I mean, fundamentally, they're pretty much the same, as you can see from the fact that material moves back and forth between Greyhawk and the Forgotten Realms all the time. I do know that in the setting of basic D&D, scenarios placed the Blackmoor campaign in, like, the distant history of Mystara or whatever, which is kind of an interesting idea, acknowledging some of those similarities, but at the same time admitting that they couldn't be combined that easily. Part of it, I think, is that when you look at fantasy campaigns like the Forgotten Realms, like Dragonlance, they emerge within an existing construct of what a fantasy, you know, D&D campaign looks like, and therefore they won't fundamentally differ from the Greyhawk model that much. Whereas Blackmoor is a contemporaneous creation, as I understand it, and therefore, you know, might share some kind of fundamentally different assumptions. But I might just be talking out of my hat. I mean, I don't know that much about any of these campaigns, and I've been trying to avoid learning, but maybe it's time to pull the cord. Anyway, that is about all the monsters that we have time for today. I wish I could say more about the Masher, but they are big wormfish, and they pull carts. The carts are far more interesting. In the next episode, I'm going to do something a little bit different. It's been a long time since I did a listener mail special. I've got a lot of interesting listener mail that I want to discuss, so I'm going to spend an episode just responding to listener questions. After that, we'll have another special episode, and then we'll be returning to our journey through the lowlife section of Creature Catalog, right here on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons attribution license. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.